Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast for April 29th. It's brought to you in part by One World Sports. I'm John Gibson, and with me, while he's on vacation, is Jim Allen. How's it going, man?
I'm always on vacation. Life is a party, babe. I'm good. I'm here in historic Hikone, in lovely Hikone City. It's an Edo period castle town between Nagoya and Kyoto, and I'll give a plug to my buddy here, staying at Tobaya, coming to you from Tobaya, which is an inn that has been operated by the Wada family for 180 years. How's that for a business?
Yeah, good morning to you too. Yeah, that's a long time.
180. Long time. I mean, back then, it predates pro baseball in Japan. Baseball as it was known in America. It was like about 10 different games when they started doing this place here. Mm. So
sounds like you're sleeping with a lot of insects.
Oh, nah, it's beautiful. It's comfortable. It's cozy. It's everything you want. So come to Hikone and you know where to stay.
All right. On today's show, we've got an interview with Josh Whitesell of the Lotte Marines. We're going to discuss homers. We're going to discuss Tony Blanco's Triple Crown pace and more. So let's get started.
Clearing the bases!
All right, remember, if you live in the United States, find out more information on watching live Giants games on oneworldsports.com. So on Wednesday, I went out to Seibu Dome and had the pleasure of talking to Josh Whitesell. It's the second time he's been on the show. His Lotte Marines are not doing too poorly. They're doing okay. He's hitting a few home runs. He's doing okay in terms of that stuff. But I still don't see the Marines as a championship team. I'm not really seeing them as a playoff team. But they're doing okay. They're having a better start than I expected.
Well, they're playing well enough to be the 2010 Marines, provided that they can be sort of mediocre the whole year and then be superb in the last 3 weeks of, you know, the season. They're good enough for that. Although that was a good offensive team. That was a good offensive team, and this team doesn't really have that earmark yet.
Yeah, I think we were talking about the stats before we started taping here, and you know, their ERA is over 4. Their batting is okay in terms of team batting average, but they're not hitting a lot of home runs. They're being outscored, and yet they're over 500, and they're what, second? If you want to look at the standings now, they're second, but everybody's about the same. They're only two victories, three victories separating you from second to last place. So, I mean, it's too early to look at standings and stuff like that.
Well, it's always too early to look at standings in the Pacific League because that's the way the Pacific League is.
Yeah, and they didn't play particularly well. They didn't look good at all on the game that I went to. They got blown out. Fujioka, the second-year lefty, was throwing, and they looked outclassed by a team that's really playing well in the Lions. So, I mean, it's a long season. It's a long season. That's the only thing to keep in mind. If we recall last year, the Lions were getting beaten up, having gray matter all over the field because they were every day getting their brains beaten out, and they still ended up making the playoffs, and like we said last week, still having a chance to win the Pacific League title at the end of the season.
They did indeed. It was so that's the way, the Pacific League works like that because, you know, there's no Giants. There's no team that can just be consistently better at so many different parts of the game than everybody else that you just know they're going to win as long as they don't fall over.
As long as they don't fall over.
Yeah, as long as there's no, you know, tragedy or something.
Wobble, you know, like, you weebles, but don't fall down.
That's the Giants. That is the Giants at their heart. I mean, you got to love a lot of the players, but the Pacific League, you know, we always think the Hawks were that kind of team until they lost half their pitching staff a couple of years ago. They haven't quite got over that hump yet since then, so.
Yeah. All right, well, let's listen to what Josh had to say.
All right, we are very pleased to once again have Josh Whitesell on the show. Thank you for being here.
It's my pleasure.
All right, dude. Now, you were dealing with some physical issues last year. How are you feeling this year?
Pretty good. You know, came through camp feeling really good physically, and then had a little right wrist problem crop up here early in the season, but hopefully I'll work my way through it and feel good the rest of the year.
What is it? Would you get bitten or something?
I honestly don't know exactly, but right at the back of my right thumb, kind of right when you roll through the contact zone. It probably hurts a lot more if I miss, so I just need to make sure I hit the ball every time.
I bet you say that to all the guys. All right, let's talk about your team. First of all, what's the difference between the team this year and last year?
Well, I mean, it's the same group of guys, but obviously they're all a whole different coaching staff, so everybody's just trying to, you know, get a feel for one another and, you know, go out there and get prepared every day and try to put our put a good game together and put a lot of wins up on the board.
What are some of the issues with the coaches that you, not issues, but things that you're trying to work through with them?
Nothing hugely different. I think there's been a little more shuffling of the lineup early in the season right now. I think maybe this, you know, the coaches and the players trying to get a feel for one another and see exactly what kind of combination is going to work best. So as players, we just got to try to be as prepared as we can, and when our name's called, be ready to go in there and get the job done.
What about the new skipper? What's the difference between him and your old skipper?
I would say the shuffling of the lineup right now, and you know, the inconsistency with that, trying to find the best combination of what's going to get us the wins and get everybody to perform up to their ability. So we're going through that early in the season right now, and I'm sure once we get a little bit deeper in the season, things will calm down as far as that goes, and everybody will be more settled in their roles.
Is that more of him trying to feel out and see what the players can do and get to know them, or is it more of him trying to put pressure on himself to win games?
I think it's a little bit of both. It's probably more of the former, trying to you know, make sure we get the right combination and everybody's in a role they're comfortable with, so that we can get you know, the best performance out of everybody.
Now, this is your second year in the Pacific League, and you've gone through all the teams at least once, so give me a rundown of what you think about the other five teams.
Well, I think there's a lot of the biggest difference between this league and the other league is the parity, and that I think every team is a lot is competitive on a nightly basis and can beat each other every night. I think early on in the going, I know SoftBank hasn't quite played up to their potential, but I would definitely expect them to get hot and to play some good baseball, because they have a really good team. And then, you know, the other five teams are just you know, trying to feel our way out here early in the season, trying to get the ball rolling and trying to get some wins.
Any particular teams that stand out? I mean, the Lions have been doing really well. The Oryx Buffaloes have been scoring a lot. They haven't been winning a lot.
Yeah, that lineup over there with Oryx is a pretty fearsome lineup, you know, going one through seven with some really good hitters. And you know, the Sabres just rolling the bats really well right now. They're just playing some good baseball, and I think they came out of the gates as the hot team, and I think that shows with their record and their first place standing right now. You know, over the course of the season, we'll see how that's going to hold, but they're definitely presently playing the best baseball in the league.
All right. Yeah, I think the standings say that. I think the way they're playing says that too. Now, one thing that we're looking at, and of course we can't put the data together yet, it's too soon, but it looks like the ball is carrying a little bit better than it has the past 2 years. What's your take on it?
Well, like you said, it's too soon. I'm not ready to overtake 2 years of evidence with 3 weeks of evidence, but like you said, it does appear to be flying a little better. So I mean, I'm a hitter, I hope it's flying better, but I'm not quite ready to jump on that bandwagon yet and confirm those suspicions or assumptions.
Have you guys been talking about it?
It's been mentioned, but I mean, a lot of the pitchers like Greisinger, and you know, they're kind of giving us a hard time, because as hitters, we've definitely complained about the ball the last few years. So, you know, he likes to remind me, hey, you know, this so-and-so team hit 5 home runs last night, or blah, blah, blah. And I'm just like, give it some time, Seth, and we'll see. You know, I'm not ready to jump on that bandwagon yet.
How's it feeling coming off of your bat?
You know, I mean, it's tough to tell. I don't know. It's tough to tell. I think the ball might have a touch more carry this year, but let's give it a couple more weeks.
Now, something that Hansen's Matt Merton mentioned to us once before was that the break on some of the pitches was a little bit different with this new ball. Is that still the case?
I would definitely agree with that, and I would say that probably played as much or more of an impact in the statistics as the flight of the ball was. That I feel like this ball compared to the ball when I first came over does have more movement on certain pitches, specifically the fork ball, and that makes it more difficult on us as hitters, because the more movement, the more we have to make adjustments to different pitches. So I would 100% agree with Matt on that aspect.
All right, now you guys are playing okay. You know, it's going to be a long season, we know that. What areas do you guys need to focus on as you move forward?
Just being more consistent. I think we've played pretty well out the gate here. I think our bats some nights obviously don't show up, and that's when last night we get into trouble. But you have to give credit where credit is due, and Makita pitched a really good game. I mean, you know, he's got a job for a reason also, and you know, we just got to come out and try to play our best baseball on a nightly basis, and I know that we'll put up a lot of wins if we can do that.
I know you will too, buddy. Thanks a lot for joining us. It's always a pleasure.
It's my pleasure. Thank you very much.
All right, we'll see you again.
Okay, thank you very much for the chat, Josh.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Josh. It's always good to hear your voice. We'll get out and see. I'll get out and see you and talk to you pretty soon.
Now, I was teasing him before I talked to him because his hair was long, and I don't know. He needed a haircut, and I said, "Dude, if you're gonna sport it like that, I'll hook you up, man. I'll do it for you."
Don't make fun of the guy.
I hope you got that taken care of. I'm not threatening. I was gonna help a brother out, man. What do you mean, threat?
You're scaring me. The whole thought of that.
It was just gonna end up short, but I mean, you know, it's gonna be nice. I was gonna do a good job. I do my own hair, so yeah. What stood out in the interview for you?
Well, it was really Josh. I mean, we Josh being Josh and me being me, we often talk about how people say silly things about baseball based on very small, you know, a very limited amount of information. You know, how people look in the game we're at, how many people looked at the game we watched on TV.
Right.
And it was no surprise to hear him talk about, you know, it's too early to tell, because this is really, I mean, my point of view about baseball is, you know, who was the best team last year? Well, it's too early to tell when the season's over.
No, it's easy to look back and say, well, this was the best team, but this team didn't win. That's what it is.
I won't even go that far. I wouldn't even go that far, because there's so many things that you can't know what happened, that, you know, the best team wins, you know, a third of the time, or a quarter, a fourth of the 40% of the time. So it's not that simple. Anyway, we've talked about this. Josh and I have talked about this in the past. So it was sort of like, wow, that's Josh. So I know. So getting the coaching staff is interesting. I was interested to hear what a player thinks about new managers. And, you know, I didn't get the feeling of, you know, this guy is significantly different. But of course, he's had three managers in 3 years.
Right.
So
coming over from the Swallows like he did.
Correct.
Right.
So you wonder, what are the personalities? And I want to hear about the personalities, but I'm guessing he's not going there.
Yeah, I didn't get the feeling that he wanted to go deep inside of it. And I don't blame it. And possibly this is also still possible. He's not even quite sure, because the manager you start out with in camp is different from the manager in game during spring training games, and who is different from the manager when the games actually count, in terms of game operation, maybe game management.
Sure.
The guy behind the scenes, of course, is the same, but in terms of managing the game, maybe he does something different or does something that you're not used to in close games that he doesn't do during blowouts. And I mean, there's a lot of things to get adjusted to in terms of how that manager dictates what he wants to do in a game and how he sees fit to use the players. And so I think he's still getting used to it.
Well, when I can't really speak about Ito being managing the Marines because I've yet to see the Marines. I've yet to have been go to a Marines game. But when he was a Lions manager, he did what most new managers do. When he started, he gave opportunities to guys who weren't getting that many opportunities. Mm-hmm. So particularly, we've got Taichi Suzuki now.
Right.
He's just been thrown in, and, you know, he saw this guy could play, and, okay, well, oh, can I move? I can move Higuchi? Okay, let's do that. So that's, as far as I can tell, is the big move, the big thing he's done mm-hmm. with the Marines. But this is something most managers do. Almost every manager, given the opportunity, has got an idea about one guy who can play who isn't.
Yeah. Well, the thing I remember about Ito is that some of the players weren't quite sure about him when he left the Lions. I forgot what year that was.
Would have been 2007 was his last year.
And I just got the idea they weren't too high on him. So I wasn't surprised that he was out of baseball for a while in terms of managing a team. And now he's back, but I don't see that he's going to be a difference maker for that team, that particular squad.
Yeah, I wonder. His success with the Lions was largely, well, he won as the Lions do. They win a pennant every year. They change managers. And they went to the Japan Series. They didn't win it they did win it in 2004 when he became the manager. And his thing in 2004 was the Lions had this kid on their farm team who wasn't getting any opportunities because the current manager didn't think he could play, and that kid was Hiroki Nakajima. Nakajima, excuse me.
Yeah, Hiroki.
And of course, when Ito left, there were a bunch of guys on the Lions farm team who could play, who he didn't think could play, and then Watanabe came in and gave them jobs, and they took off. So this is a pretty standard pattern. If he was famous for anything, it was famous for trying to keep his young guns, his flashy young kids, Nakajima and Kataoka and Kuriyama,
mm-hmm.
from getting big heads. This seemed to be a mission of his. And he, when...
You mean keep them from getting a head as big as his?
Well, we're not going to talk about physiognomy or anything like that. But Ito's basically a pretty friendly, nice guy. But I'll tell you, I'm going to say 2006, Yasuyuki Kataoka was having a really good season, and Bobby Valentine wanted to add him. He was the Pacific League All-Star manager, having won the Japan Series the year before.
Bobby
and
was.
And he wanted to add Kataoka to his team because he was having an outstanding first half.
Mm-hmm.
And the story from Bobby at that time was Ito said, no, he'll have chances in the future. It sounded to me like Ito wanted to keep him in his place.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, don't, it's too, he's too, essentially, he said he's too young to be on the all-star team.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I'm not convinced Kataoka is much of an all-star anyway, but, you know, what a thing to say about your players, you know, give somebody else a chance.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not sure why he didn't have such a good reputation. Maybe that's part of it. But I just know that some of the players were glad to see him leave.
Well, the end of his regime was really weird because it was his last year as Lions manager was the year that the Lions got a new team president, and they said that it came to the knowledge of the team president that the Lions had been giving money to amateur players, and they'd been exceeding the guidelines for
I remember that
for signing bonuses for amateur first year players, and so he basically looked into this because he was of course not a baseball guy. He said, you know, this is a problem. This is an integrity issue with mm-hmm. Japanese baseball. He looked into it, and everybody in baseball said, this is a terrible thing that's going on that the Lions did, and they just ate this guy alive in PR for pointing out that this is something that really happened. You know, it's sort of like, well, this is the Lions are bad. The Lions are a bad team. Anyway, so one of the revelations, one of the things that was made public was about a player who had been getting paid in high school, paid a lot of money in high school. And considering if anybody remembers Twin Peaks about how the murderer's hair turned white, I think Ito's hair turned white the next day. Because I think it was him.
Yeah.
And he really kind of he kind of freaked out that year.
Yeah. Well, I know he was in Korea. I don't know if he was managing in South Korea or not, but you know, he's back and we'll see how he does with this team. Now, the one thing that I was intrigued by was the fact that Josh said he's having a wrist issue. And
yeah.
It's hard for that to get better with
sure.
all the swinging these guys do, especially a guy like Josh who swings violently. But I also heard someone say about a player, this is a different sport, but he said, you know, this guy is not going to play again until he's 100%. Well, that just means he's going to have to sit the season out probably because guys don't, you know, you don't operate at 100%, particularly in baseball. You get banged up and dinged up and there's always something hurting. So, I expect him to be productive. He had a double the night that I was there. He had a home run that ended up being the difference in the game in the series finale that they won. So I look at that and I hope his wrist gets better. I don't think he knows what it is, so we'll have to keep an eye on that. I also love what he said about guys settling into their roles. And I remember that you gave me grief about this on a show. I don't know, maybe the first year when I talked
about
it.
I give you grief on every show. What was this particular?
Yeah, what was it, this instance?
What was this particular grief giving incident about?
In this instance, I was saying that I think roles are really important, guys need, and especially with the pitchers, but guys need to know. And he brought that up a couple times, and it gave me the impression that he really has a strong feeling about what guys' roles are on the team, and that he wants to know what his role is, and he wants other guys to know what their roles are. And that's what we've talked about before, about guys trying to do too much on certain pitches. Maybe there's a pitch you're trying to drive it and get more than you really need to do at a particular time.
Oh, I'm absolutely in agreement with that.
Yeah, so I mean, the role part, I don't know what other roles guys could have on that team because they're basically a bunch of slap and run guys and a couple of guys with some pop. I mean, even Iguchi at this point in his career is no longer the real home run extra base threat he was before.
Yeah, he's not going to be stealing 30 bases this year.
Unless he's got a gun and a mask and some roller skates to get away. I mean,
I think if he steals 30 bases, the police will be called to check where they're missing from equipment rooms.
Exactly. So, you know, the roles they're comfortable in, that was the phrase that he used that really caught my ear there. And I just got to believe he feels strongly about having focus out there. And that's an important thing for these Marines, because for them to compete, if they're not going to pitch all that well, if they're not going to hit home runs, they've got to do with, you know, get on base. They've got to do the little things to win games, especially catching the ball. I don't like the middle of their infield, I got to be honest.
Well, who's the regular short here? Well, the regular shortstop is a guy, Shunichi Nemoto, who's always been a good hitter. Shunichi Nemoto has been a good hitter really for the last 6-7 years. And his biggest problem has been his arm. He doesn't have a shortstop's arm.
Yeah.
He's not overly fast. I mean, offensively, he's basically an on-base percentage guy. A little sees he's fast, but he's not a base stealer. So that's his game. He gets on base. He's not a base stealer. He's really Valentine wanted him to be the second baseman. In fact, I'm certain that his career would be a lot different if the Marines hadn't signed Iguchi. Now, Iguchi turned out to be a really good signing for the Marines, but
right. Nobody
knew that at the time.
Yeah.
So anyway, so Nemoto is probably overmatched at shortstop, but you know, it's a matter of degree. Is he the best shortstop they could have? He may be the best solution for this team, considering that he is a good offensive player and Taiichi Suzuki is a good offensive player.
Yeah. Well, I meant defensively. I mean,
right.
Yeah,
right.
Obviously the Miller, the infield, is not the greatest, but, you know, if they just make the routine plays and not, you know, make a sparkling play here and there,
right,
they're going to be fine in terms of defense, but they're going to give up a few extra base runners here and there, and which I think a couple of teams in the Pacific League have that issue, including the Lions. So, I mean,
okay,
it's not anything that's unique. It's about getting through it and helping the pitchers. And that's the other issue, is their pitching staff. I'm not really convinced about this pitching staff and that it's a playoff worthy pitching staff, but things can change. It's a long season and guys, you know, go through slumps both offensively and on the mound. So I guess maybe we can assume that things will change as the season goes. It might get better, might get worse, but
yeah,
it's not going to stay the same.
Well, yeah, I certainly think it doesn't interest me. The idea of roles on the team, because basically one of the things that Ito is the third Marines manager, the Marines have had since 2004. And when Bobby was there, one of the criticisms was that people didn't know what their roles were. This was from a sports writer's old guy's view.
Mm.
People didn't know what their roles were. They didn't know where they... what that meant was they didn't know where they would be batting in the batting order, which is what, you know, there's so few things in baseball that are visible. There are a lot of things in baseball that are visible, but one of the things in Japan is where you're batting in the order.
Mm-hmm.
Because they've made it a science of like, oh, I don't know, like predicting earthquakes. everybody tries to talk about it. Like, we know what's going on, and it's like a numerology thing in Japan is, oh, he's a, you know, the Giants, this guy, Alex Ramirez holds the record for most consecutive games played in the starting number four spot for the Omiuri Giants. I mean, like, who would care about this stuff except in Japan?
Yeah.
So anyway, the fact that Valentine changed his batting order frequently was an insult to all these old Japanese ball players and old Japanese sports writers. And so when Nishimura came, one of the mandates for him was to not change the batting order every day. Okay, now, and then in comes Ito, who tends to change things a lot. I think when he was with the Lions, people's roles were vague. I think hearing Josh say that he's trying to work out and figure out combinations. And I think my guess is that anybody who doesn't star with Ito is going to be waiting several years to find out what their roles are.
Yeah. I mean, the roles are important. And you look at, you know, some of the evidence here that shows that, you know, the Marines are being outscored. Like I said, they're giving up. They're walking. They have, I think, 86 walks allowed, and they've received 90 plus walks from their batter. So their ERA is over 4. You know, the roles are important, and the batting order is important, and all that stuff. But I think more than that, they're going to have to get these numbers in a better place. I don't like the way those numbers play out for an entire season, because we're only through a month, and if those numbers increase exponentially over the course of a season, it doesn't bode well for them. But yeah, the role thing is important for me too. And I didn't actually know that one of the mandates for the new manager was not to change the batting.
Well, that was Nishimura. And with Ito, see, that's no longer an issue. But so that was the specific manager replacing Valentine was, you know, basically have a stricter preseason. You know, he had some things. They wanted him to be the anti-Valentine. But Nishimura, however, came out of that. He'd played for Bobby, and he'd been Bobby's head coach for a number of years. And what he kept about Bobby's team was this idea that your role on the team is very important. It was critical to the Marines that everybody had a job to do when Valentine was here. Now, of course, rules change as players change, but everything was pretty well. That was a big issue. And now we have a new manager who's not coming out of the tradition, has a different way of doing things, who's been to Korea, who's been all over the place, and things are different. I think it is going to be a big change.
So Ito doesn't have to necessarily keep the batting order this
year? No, I don't think. Whoever replaces him will probably say, we want a manager who defines roles and whatever. Yeah. But I want to get back to the Marines a little bit, because I was looking at the Marines, and they're very similar to the at this stage in the game. They're very similar to Josh's last team with the Yakult Swallows, when we had this conversation about your guys aren't nearly as good as your win loss record, and I expect most players take a front at that kind of insinuating statistical analysis. And he said, yeah, you're right. And he said, we're a good team, but we haven't played well enough to have won as many games as we have.
Yeah.
And he was aware of that. And he said, look, I'm a math guy. I understand this stuff.
Right. Well, he's hitting well. And, we did talk, and that's the other thing. I guess the biggest thing that stood out for me was the talk about the ball.
Yeah.
And I'm convinced the ball is carrying better. And we did this interview on Wednesday. He got jammed a little bit, just a tiny bit, but he still was able to muscle a double that went in the right center gap. And then the home run that I talked about earlier that won the game on Thursday was the opposite field job. And I know you had done the study right away that first year, this new ball, and we talked about how opposite field home runs were disappearing and all that stuff. And
they didn't disappear. Well, they were disappearing. It was like presto changeo, there are none.
Yeah.
There weren't any.
Yeah. So I think after the taping, Josh and I talked about Tony Blanco of the Yokohama Bay Stars being a triple crown threat now. I mean, only Hector Luna, who's had a great, great start for the Dragons, was hitting higher than he was average-wise. Otherwise, Blanco hit a home run on Saturday that gave him number 13.
Sure.
He had a couple doubles, so he upped his batting average. So, and the thing that Josh says was, look, Tony Blanco, a triple crown guy, he's not that kind of hitter. He just isn't. And he's the most powerful, according to Josh, and this is a big, strong guy in his own right, and says, look, he's the most powerful foreign hitter that we have in Japan. Now, I don't know if Willie Mo Pena with the Hawks is stronger or not. They both look like they could pick up a moose and throw him, about 50 yards. But wow. Triple crown, and this transitions into what I want to talk about next, which is he did mention that Greisinger said in the talk that, hey, another team hit five home runs in a game. I don't think he meant one team. I think the two teams combined for five home runs.
Okay.
So it got me to thinking, and I decided I would go through all the games to see what teams had hit three home runs or more in a game.
You're going all gym on us, John.
And I found that there were 16 instances that a team has hit three or more home runs in a game this season. Now, our friend Michael Westbay, who does the Yaku Report podcast, also did a little research for me real quick. It only took him 5 minutes, and he found that there were 33 such games last year in which in instances that teams had hit three or more home runs. So 33 in all of last year, we're already at 16. And the year before, there were 36 instances in which teams hit three or more home runs. And he didn't give me 2010. He gave me 2009, in which there were 119 instances. And at the pace we're at now,
right,
through about 1 month's worth of games, that would put us at about 100 games where we have three or more home runs in a game by one team. And that would be almost three times what we've seen the past 2 years. Now, it's too early to make decisions on all these statistics and what it means, and we can't put it into context now. We can only say that the pace is different.
We can say for certain that the pace is different. as I pointed out last week, that what I'm seeing so far was not a deviation from what the last 2 years as much as it was a deviation from last year, which was a very unusual year. And I'm still, if you think about last year as being odd, I have no reason why last year would have been odd, but the home runs were way down. But things were different last year. It was a year, this whole thing with the new ball, and Josh said, I don't want to throw out the last 2 years of, you know, evidence.
Which was a great line. That was a great line.
Well, it is true.
Yeah.
I mean, it is true. And here's the other thing is there were three changes going on when they changed the ball in 2011. One was they pooled both leagues' umpires into basically they took – instead of having Pacific League umpires and Central League umpires, they have NPB umpires now. Right. They put – and they mixed the crews together, and they had guys working together who didn't work together, and they had guys – now, here's the thing is most of the umpires now at NPB are coming out of the Central League, and the pitching styles – to some degree in the Central and Pacific Leagues were partly defined by, or the game plans were partly defined by the umpires. Mm-hmm. What pitchers could get away with, where the umpires missed, how could you take advantage of that as a battery? Okay. That opened up opportunities that didn't exist before. And as Josh and we had a number of players that spoken to. You mentioned Matt Merton, and I know Craig Brazell and Josh, and a number of the pitchers as well. Shohei Tateyama, the Swallows, said, "Yeah, the ball's different." He adapted his delivery to what he could do with the new ball.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he made more of his fork ball. So Josh is really familiar with that one. So we had three changes going on in 2010, and I think I do agree with people who say that people have tried to change their swings. I watched Termal Sledge in Yokohama trying to hit home runs in batting practice by basically hitting the ball as hard as humanly possible.
Mm.
And they just got bad swings and ended up with batting practice balls being jammed. So I think we saw a lot of that the last couple of years. And I do think that part of the innovation is people just relaxing and going back to their best swing to hit a baseball. I think that's part of it. That's the underlying the adjustment part. Now, does it look like the ball's flying better? I would say, yeah, it sure looks like it. Does the data look like it's – well, the data looks like it's flying a lot better than last year when it was just an abysmal year. Now, why it's not flying is a really good question. Why it doesn't look right is a good question. I don't know anybody knows. Oh, hell, I don't know anybody who has the evidence, who wants to publish the evidence, who knows.
Okay. All right. Well, maybe it's up to you, since you get to go out and do stories, to go in and interview the people at Mizuno, because, of course, I don't get to.
They came out and said, well, we didn't do nothing.
Yeah,
and NPB said we didn't do nothing, which we believe, because that's what NPB's good at.
Yes. Now, last week we referenced the T60, and I wanted to explain that because when you and I happened to be at Jingu Stadium early on in April, we were talking to Tony Blanco and teasing him that the way the ball was flying, that he'd be able to hit 60 home runs this year. And so I said, yeah, we're going to start calling you T60. And I did see him. I did a story about Alex Ramirez that appeared in the paper yesterday, which was Friday. Which was Saturday. And at that time, I saw Tony and I yelled out T60, and he gave me that wry smile and laughed back, and he remembered, you know. And
well, you can give the other man some credit for coming up with the 60 number.
Yeah, who did that?
Lastings Millage.
It was Lastings. Okay, Lastings was saying, the way the ball's flying this year, you're going to be able to hit 60 home runs. And so, yeah, we started.
Well, that playing in Yokohama as opposed to
a real stadium.
Yeah, well, I remember Tyrone Woods used to talk about Nagoya Dome after winning a home run title in Yokohama. He'd said, "You got to be a real man to hit the ball and hit a home run in Nagoya Dome."
Yeah, so, you can't be playing in that fake stadium in Yokohama.
Yeah, but speaking of which, I know Tony. I've seen Tony play in Yokohama about five or six times, and he's probably before this year, and he's probably hit four home runs in those five games.
Yeah. Well, he had a stretch here recently where he had homered in five straight games, and obviously
right.
You know the record for
I don't remember the record, to be honest.
It is seven, held by two players. Now, guess who?
Randy Bass is one.
Yep.
And the other seven I should know, but I don't. Who
is it? Sadaharu. Oh, of course.
Oh, did he hit home runs too?
Yep. Did he hit home runs too? A couple.
Okay, he hit a few. He hit a few in his day.
All right, and speaking of streaks or consecutive streaks, now you know Jun Hirose, a player I know you've liked for a long time,
yep.
had this amazing streak, and he's a guy whose body or managers or for some reason has never played a full season.
We had one full season, 2010. Oh.
No, it's not a full season. It was only 130-something games, not 100.
Well, 2000, okay.
I mean, a full season meaning every game, dude, not just, you know,
every game.
98%
of. Well, that's like saying 99% of the players don't play a full season. Then,
okay. All right.
Because,
all right. All
okay.
Right.
Let's say he was a regular. He was the regular Carp right fielder.
Okay, I'll give you that. But has never played a whole season.
Right.
And not only that. I'm sorry, he played 90 games only three times in his 12-plus seasons.
Yeah.
And he's hit over 300 just twice.
Yeah, well, that... I think
one of those was in 2005 when he went to the plate 43 times. So I don't think that counts.
Right. And it shouldn't. And he's a prototype Carp player. Now, the Carp are an interesting team for a number of reasons.
All right, let's talk about the streak first. He broke the Japan record for consecutive plate appearances reaching base.
Correct.
And he did it 15 straight plate appearances. Okay.
Correct.
Including getting hit by pitches three times, which...
Yeah, that's the hard way.
Yeah. Okay, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Especially if you're a Carp player.
Yeah, prototypical Carp.
He's a prototypical Carp player in the sense that... he's a really good outfielder when he can play. The Carp have been collecting outfielders really for the last, since the early 90s.
As a hobby.
Yeah, pretty much. And one of they've interestingly enough, the Carp owner has basically been looking for the last 22 years, he's been looking for the next Tomonori Maeda.
Right.
And so he keeps collecting outfielders with the hopes that this is going to be the guy who's the next Tomonori Maeda. And here's the problem is they don't turn out to be Tomonori Maeda. And so they become
props.
Bench players and role players.
Props.
And
just props.
Exactly. They're extras. And some of these guys can really, really play. And when I mean really, really play, I think Hirose can really play, really play. He has one of the best arms in Japan.
Yep.
He's a good offensive player when he's healthy, but he's never healthy. And he shares he shares an outfield with Soichiro Amaya when Amaya is healthy. And it's just a Carp thing to do is to have a bunch of good outfielders and who are never healthy at the same time.
You just call it carpal tunnel.
Oh, very good. I like that. The Hiroshima carpal tunnel. Well, anyway, yeah, it was just a real brief about Hirose. He has a .351 career on base percentage.
Yep.
So it's not a shock that he can do it. It's just that a shock that he could be healthy for 15 consecutive plate appearances.
Oh, no, you didn't. Yeah, I mean, the other three guys who had 14 consecutive plate appearances where they reached base were Lotte's Tokitaka Minamibuchi, and then some elite players like Yomiuri's Yoshinobu Takahashi, a best nine and all-star guy, and then Michihiro Ogasawara, a two-time MVP. And,
right.
These are elite players, so it's just this statistical rarity that allows a player like Hirose to do this. It's just numbers. And
well,
like I said, you got
Ogasawara, yes. Ogasawara is the most likely, the most likely to succeed from that group.
Actually, I think it's Yoshinobu. I think Ogasawara is the most likely to strike out in a stretch like that.
Well, no, he does strike out a lot, but he's also a guy who hit for average and drew, at one point in his career, just drew bases. He drew walks like a madman. So he had both of all those things going on. He'd go into streaks where he'd strike out a lot, but he was a guy who did draw. Hirose draws a lot of walks, and which brings up Yoshinobu, who doesn't. That's the thing. Yoshinobu was just a pure hitter, and so that's really hard to go 15, you know, to get that many hits. And I believe Yoshinobu was challenging when he was in that streak. He challenged for the consecutive hit record, which is held by Darren Bragg. It's Glenn Bragg. You call him Darren Bragg. Glenn Bragg. Sorry for all you.
Consecutive hits in plate appearances.
Correct. Which brings us to Tokitaka Minamibuchi, much loved by Lotte fans. He was a singles hitting guy who could draw walks.
Mm-hmm.
And he was an infielder. He was a shortstop when Bobby Valentine showed up in 1995. And he got switched from short to second because he was less athletic than Koichi Hori, who became the Lotte shortstop for several years.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the reasons that they wanted to fire Bobby Valentine was because he made Hori the shortstop. And then when Valentine left, they just said, oh, geez, well, let's just keep Hori as a shortstop.
He wanted to fire Bobby the first time, right?
Right, the first time. Well, they kept him until they got Kosaka.
Right.
Makoto Kosaka, who was a pretty good player, a pretty good shortstop. I would say a really good shortstop.
Yeah. So Hirose did it. He got the record by getting four hits in a game on Friday,
yep.
The last of which came in, I think, the eighth inning with the team ahead, and it was a pretty good pitch. I went back to Yahoo to see if it was a forkball. I thought it was a forkball, and Yahoo had, I guess they changed the, they take off the pitch by pitch.
After a couple of days.
Oh, well, I went back and looked on Saturday and it was gone. So anyway, so I'm going to call it a forkball. It was a good pitch. Actually, it was not that bad a pitch. It got
yeah.
to middle of the plate, but, it is
bit, yeah.
a pretty amazing streak for a guy who is not a regular and, you know, is not going to go down in Hiroshima Carp lore. But his on-base average, his on-base percentage was .650 after Friday's game. So we'll see how long that stands. And we'll see how long he stays healthy, actually. I think that.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. .650.
It could stay .650 or 6-something because he might get injured the next
week
and something.
Well, that's what the carp that happens to the carp. There are things we know about Japanese baseball. Carp players get hurt. Lions players get hurt.
Swallows players get hurt.
Well, that's this year. But yeah,
and last year.
Swallows pitchers get hurt.
Yeah, it's neat. Poor guys.
And Oryx Buffaloes have really good players, but nobody knows where they should play.
Right. Now, speaking of Maeda and the Swallows and the Carp, Tomonori Maeda got plunked the other day
yep.
by this rookie lefty, Masaya Emura.
He's not a rookie.
They called him a rookie, I guess.
Is he?
They called
him. Okay.
Okay, well, I'll check it. He gets plunked by this kid and ends up with a broken wrist.
Yep.
He's gone. He's expected to miss most of the season. And this is a real blow to him because of his age. What is he, 40? I have to look up his age. You know, he's no spring chicken, and he's going to have – he had surgery already. But it's a bigger blow to the team because – you know, they really could. They use him at every opportunity with runners on base to get guys home. He was 4-for-9 pinch hitting this year. He's only a pinch hitter, as you specified earlier in the show. You know, and my call for more passion. We've been getting it since I made that call.
Yeah,
a lot of passion, and you know, they didn't. It wasn't a brawl, but
no, it was sort of
a mound meeting.
Yeah, it was sort of an adult heated meeting. On the field, the players sort of walked out onto the field and to watch the Carp pitching coach go after the Swallows pitching coach.
Yeah. Yeah. They almost got into it. He's going to be 42 in June, Maeda. So that doesn't bode well for him. I don't know. It was unfortunate. I don't think the kid hit him intentionally, but earlier in the pitch sequence, he did throw up and in to him.
Sure.
And Maeda considered charging the mound until he realized he was really hurting and really couldn't do anything with that wrist.
Yeah. Maeda leads with his left, so that wasn't going to work.
Now, Kazuo Matsui of the Rakuten Eagles had his 21st leadoff home run the other day. Now, he's way behind, and this is leading off a game, starting a game. He's way behind the record.
Sure.
Which is 43 by, and I think you might remember this guy.
This guy I remember. Yutaka Fukumoto.
Yeah.
Hall of Famer.
Yeah.
Hall of Fame leadoff guy for the Hankyu Braves.
Unbelievable that Matsui, he's got 21 of these things, and he's not even halfway there, really.
Right.
To the record. But it was interesting. Interesting.
Yeah.
Now, the one thing I want to close with is the fact that, and this has been a bugaboo with you for, I think, years and years, but we had a couple games in which pitchers, one was going for probably his first shutout in quite a while, which was
sure.
Kisanuki with the Fighters.
Right.
And the other one, I didn't get it all. Sawamura was pitching well, but there was really, he looked tired early on in the ninth inning. You go get him and you win the game. But that game wasn't really so much in doubt as where the Fighters the other night let Kisanuki put the winning runs on base.
Right.
The tying runs on base and bring Willie Mo Pena up to the plate and had to bring in their closer, Hisashi Takeda.
And who's just coming off an injury.
Yeah, I mean, you know, just to get Kisanuki a shutout, I mean, is it really worth it to put right. your team or a victory in peril like that? I know you love these things.
Oh, yeah, they drive me nuts. Of course, the epitome, the opposite of that is you do everything for a win and, you know, your hero meets Ochiai and it's an important game and I'm going to, you know, I don't care the guy's throwing a perfect game in the Japan Series. I'm taking him out in a one-run game. And
get out of here, kid.
That.
Thanks for the good work.
That part I absolutely understand because it should be all about the game. But Japan's this country where everything is, as we said, is for the team. Oh, I only care about the team winning, blah, blah, blah. But part of the team winning is this having individual accomplishments. But, you know, that's why records in Japan are so weird. But anyway, this is just a complete game of which we have very little in Japan. We have very few in Japan now. I mean, used to be starting pitchers would complete, ordinary starting pitchers would complete 8-9 games a year. Stars might complete 17 or 8, you know, they might complete a fourth of their games.
Yeah, well,
not because they were good, just because they were left out there to get beat up.
Yeah. Well, it didn't bother me so much with the Giants. I just thought it was kind of
right.
silly. But they're so far ahead already. I mean, in the Central League, in terms of when they're 17-6 as of going into Sunday's games.
Right.
The Fighters, on the other hand, need every win they can get. They're under 500.
Yeah.
It was not worth the risk at all. And he was not doing well in that inning from the start. And you think they somehow wiggled out of this thing. I didn't look. I can look up the game now, but they got out of it, but I wouldn't even bother putting a game in peril for Kisanuki.
Yeah, that's the thing. I don't know what the, you know, you gotta, I'd love to, I would have loved to hear the conference, the post-game press conference with Kuriyama on that one, the Fighters manager, to see what he was, you know, what his thinking was. You know, he says what he means, and he's fairly clear about it. Some of the stuff he says is pretty weird, but he's very articulate. So that would have been interesting to hear. With the Giants, Sawamura was pitching well into the ninth inning, and then the ninth inning, when he's got a chance to pitch his first shutout of the season, it's like, okay, he made some bad pitches, and it just got worse. So take him out. It was a 5-run game, and it ended up as a 5-3 game.
Right, because so, he gave up a 3-run home run, and after the home run, they took him out. But in the case of the Fighters, there were guys all over the bases, and
you don't want that
with Willie Mo Pena, but
Sashi
struck him out.
And you don't want that with the Fighters' bullpen, which is still pretty good. So
yeah, Emura is listed as a rookie, he's 25, so I think he played some.
Oh, you know, I'm thinking of Igarashi.
Oh, okay.
We got another guy whose name starts with the same kanji.
Okay.
So he's probably on the injured list.
Yeah. Well, he did keep his poise after that. You know, pitching coach, I think is still Araki, right? And he went out to the mound and said, "Hey, look, kid, you hit the guy, but you know we need you to finish this game. Keep your poise." And he did. He was really poised after that. And the Swallows ended up winning that game. So.
Right. Swallows suddenly, what's up with the Swallows? If they won four games in a row after being doormats,
right? They looked like, you know, all the pieces, all the wheels were starting to come off the bus, and they just put on those little, you know, those temporary tires.
Sure.
tires, and they're rolling fine.
Yeah, I'll tell you, they were. You know, I was at Jingu the other day, and there were more ambulances waiting outside the clubhouse than there were taxis waiting outside the front of the stadium.
Oh, don't go to Jingu, man! Don't just stay away. You'll end up injured. I'm telling you.
They were waiting for me to pick up customers.
Oh gosh. And you see what happens when you guys don't send mail. This is your fault, so please send questions.
Oh, don't go there. Now you're blaming the fans. That's such a baseball thing to do.
Right.
The reason fans,
I'm not gonna blame myself.
Yeah, it's not like it's not like our product's the problem. It's the fans' fault for not showing up, for not buying it.
People, stop the bad jokes by sending your questions, especially MP3s, to yakyujohn@gmail.com. And our crack staff is waiting, so put the crack staff to work. We'll do some research. We'll get other things instead of bad jokes.
Wow. I think I just got smacked.
Well, if you don't know, then you didn't.
All right, buddy.
All right, good job this morning. Thanks for joining us while you're on vacation.
It's always a pleasure.
Tell your wife I said thank you, and we'll see you next week.
Okay, everyone. Thanks for listening.
Enjoy your baseball.